Hey friends, I am doing something just slightly different today, and that's why I started 2 minutes before the hour because I now have a static live stream address, which is kind of cool because I don't have to keep changing things every week and creating a new stream. The only downside is that doesn't really work with Google Hangouts, which is what we're going to be doing on occasion, including this coming Thursday. So I'm going to run through a list of topics here real quick, and then we will get this thing started. So news, we have some information that came in regarding the Right to Repair movement in Washington State. Thanks to Beha for sending me that link. I hadn't really done a lot of research very recently about that, and we definitely want to keep up with how that's changing or could potentially change the way that the repair industry functions and the access that we have to OEM parts and proprietary information, I guess you could say. So we'll be talking a little bit about that today. Also, there is a fitness app that members of the military have been using, and unfortunately, it is pretty much going to be able to give away their locations, which should be a very serious concern for national security and for our members of the military who are overseas and are interfacing with this application that pretty much creates a map and shows everyone where they're exercising, what time of day they go there, and if they're at a base that is not supposed to be disclosed as far as location goes, it's going to tell people exactly where they're at. So that is not going to be a good thing. Hopefully that's going to be changed, or it's probably been banned from those military bases at this point, at least during the time of day when they're exercising, or really if they're on the base at all, right? Third, I did my first baseband reball replacement job on an iPhone 6. I know someone had asked me about that, and I'm not sure who it was, but I'll talk a little bit about how that went for us. And then Thursday night coming up this weekend, we have our first panel of guests. If you didn't catch it last week, I had Greg from Greggles TV on here Thursday night. It was a lot of fun. We really were engaged with the audience and got to talk about some exciting stuff and take a look at his channel. And I have always been in favor of promoting other YouTubers. I love this platform, you know, at least up till now, for my preferred method of streaming. So hopefully that will continue. And I think that's about it. So let's get this thing going. Did I skip anything here? No, I don't think I did. All right. So first up, what are we looking at here? We are looking at Right to Repair in Washington State. As soon as I cover up my little phone art thing here. And this kind of took a jump on me. But what's going on, Beha? Good to see you. Oliver Queen, I'll pull up the chat in just a second, everyone, and we'll try to answer your questions as soon as we can and hopefully give you some direction as far as stuff like that. We get a lot of questions about part replacements or sources for part replacements. So this whole thing, Beha and everyone else, I think this is just sweet irony in a way. You know, there's a good possibility that the whole problem that we're having with batteries, which is them exploding and being difficult to remove from phones and throttling phones and making them slow down, this could blow up in the manufacturer's faces when it comes to their resistance to Right to Repair. And if you're not already familiar with that, everyone out there, it's been challenging and always continues to be a concern for those of us that repair phones as far as whether we're going to be able to source the parts to fix your phone so that you can come into a shop and have it done in 20 minutes, and having access to proprietary information and a number of other resources that we need to really get the job done correctly. And as you can imagine, the manufacturers don't really love that because they would rather, in most cases, have you just buy another phone than try to repair yours. Because obviously, if you sell a phone that just keeps working indefinitely, you can't really sell that customer another phone. So we understand the motivation behind it. Businesses are in business to make money. But at the same time, to almost force your customers into upgrading is crazy. Not to mention the sustainability of, you know, just being able to recycle things and keep their lifespan extended to a point that really makes sense, rather than saying, hey, every year you need to throw your phone in the trash and come in and drop another 500 or, you know, $1,000 or whatever it may be on investing in something that you really shouldn't have to upgrade every single year. I mean, if you have that option, that's great, but to almost force your customers into it by slowing down the equipment and making it difficult to use seems at least less than fair. So this is a place where we might have some laws that come into effect. And there are two things that up until now have been big obstacles for the Right to Repair movement, and I want to talk about that right now. Let me get the chat here open here so we can see what's going on. And actually, I need to pop this out so I can see all over. Let's see, Carl, how are you doing? And okay, French. Yeah, I don't speak French, but greetings. Oliver Queen, so you'd asked a question about getting repair parts from, and I get this question quite often. I'm probably just going to make another video, but to answer that in as few words as possible, my preferred source for replacement parts when it comes to things like screens, especially because we're going to be buying screens that are refurbished, they're typically OEM LCDs that are fitted with an aftermarket piece of glass, although we do also carry the aftermarket screens. We have a rep from a small company that does refurbishing that comes to our store and says, how many screens do you have that need to be recycled and how many screens do you want to buy? And that would be my first recommendation. If there's any way that you can make that happen, it's great to have someone who shows up at your store and says, here's my stuff, you're free to test it, make sure everything's working fine, I'll be back next week to pick up anything that you have a problem with and replenish whatever inventory you need. So as far as screens go, that is my preferred source for acquiring parts. Now, if you don't have that option, and not everyone does, obviously, I do at this point in time not have any problem directing people towards a couple of companies that we've done business with. Now, I want to mention that if anyone watches this in the future, the thing about parts suppliers is that they vary in quality from one month to the next. So it's very difficult for me to say from now on, you should always buy from these people, because I really don't know, you know, what could change. We had one company we were doing business with a couple years ago, and they pretty much shut down and left everyone with outstanding orders, just, you know, holding nothing as far as money and parts. So they filed for bankruptcy, and a lot of people got stuck with, you know, huge orders that they had put in, they never got delivered on. So I say with slight reservation that, you know, at this point in time, to the best of my knowledge, if you go with someone like Injured Gadgets or Mobile Centrics, and I think there's one other vendor, I'll try to remember what that was, and I'll put it in the video description after this is finished. In my book, you know, in as far as reputation goes and personal experience with those companies, at this point in time, they're doing a pretty good job of it. So I would say, you know, check them out and make sure you're happy with the quality. And again, you know, don't ever hesitate to go back and look at this stuff later and reevaluate and assess and see who else is in the business and what they have to offer, because it is a very competitive business. And yes, finding good parts is often a challenge. What's going on, Wayne Taylor? Good to see you here. In fact, I had a question. Hi, Robert. Hey, I'm glad everyone's showing up here. Real World Review. Wow, we've got all kinds of people on a Monday afternoon. So my plan for the Monday's live stream was always like, hey, I hope you had an awesome weekend and you got back to work and had a chance to sort of get caught up. So 2 in the afternoon, Pacific Standard Time. I realize that doesn't help anyone in other parts of the world, but you know, I have to start somewhere. So I thought this would be a good time to do it. I'm so always happy to see you guys show up here. And I hope that if you missed last week's live stream with Greg from Greggles TV, you go check that out. And look forward to this Thursday. We have a number of guests, and I'll get more into that in just a second. What I wanted to say, as far as this Right to Repair stuff goes, and there's a bill. It is actually HB. Let me pull it up here real quick. This bill is where'd it go? HB 2279, and it has picked up some momentum apparently in Washington State because of the whole battery issue. And I think that this has always been a big challenge for anyone who is in favor of Right to Repair. You know, number one is that getting any type of press coverage for something that could potentially take revenue away from manufacturers is going to be a difficult thing to make happen. You know, if you watch TV or listen to radio or look at billboards or go anywhere in a store where money is spent on advertising, a lot of times these manufacturers are paying for those ads. And as we found out with YouTube, if you're doing something that advertisers don't like, they're going to cut their advertising dollars. And I believe for that reason that many media sources are skeptical, if not just ignoring the Right to Repair movement altogether, because their sponsors have to be saying, hey, don't be encouraging people to fix their own phones and to have other options besides coming back to us and upgrade, because we're spending X, you know, probably $1 million a year to advertise on your network. So we don't want you taking away from what we're trying to sell. So that's always been one of the problems. And the second problem, in my opinion, you know, this is just me talking, of course, but one of the other problems is if you take, and there are exceptions to every rule, but if you take a look at most people who are over, I'm going to say age 50, okay? I'm just going to pick that number, but I think that's pretty fair. If you take a look at most of the people over age 50, a lot of times the reactions that you will get are, let's leave the status quo. Don't go rushing to change things. We need to keep things the way they are. I grew up with this way. Everything's fine. So as you can imagine, much of our government is made up of people in that age group. And I'm not saying that as an attack on them or, to criticize, but we have to understand the mindset of legislatures and people that vote on and approve laws. And if they're not really in tune with what's going on today, they don't really have much of a reason to worry about this stuff. And often it seems like the attitude is, well, you know, if you can't fix your phone, you shouldn't be spending so much money on a phone, or, you know, you should be doing something else, or don't worry about it. Or I had a flip phone in my day and that was fine, you know, and that's all well and good. But now we have a real tangible argument that they can understand. People's batteries blow up and their devices have been proven to run less than, you know, slower than they were supposed to in the first place because of what these manufacturers are doing. And this seems like it will be a real incentive or a good arguing point to say, look, something has to be done about this. It's been a long time since we came to the conclusion that if you need to get your car fixed, you don't have to go back to the dealer you bought it from. You don't have to go back to the manufacturer that made the car to rebuild it or to repair it. And there's no reason that electronic devices should be any different. So this is very encouraging. I hope it goes somewhere. Again, Beha, thanks for sending me that article. I think that is huge. And hopefully, you know, it looks like Washington is really pushing for this. And if it passes in one state, you know, this is kind of how things start. We need to get it passed somewhere. And once the ball gets rolling, other people tend to jump on and say, oh, you know, let's look at this. And this is what they decided. And we'll go, we'll proceed from there. And how did I get stuck on this little thing here? I had my other slide. That wasn't supposed to happen. So anyways, that is very encouraging. I hope that something changes. You know, in the meantime, I always encourage people still to insulate themselves business-wise. There's a potential for anything to happen. And, you know, another one of the questions we always get is, should I get in the phone repair business? And it's a bit discouraging. If you look at a lot of the forums out there, when people ask that question, much of the advice is forget about it. Don't get into repairing phones. It's becoming very competitive and manufacturers are making it so hard to fix them. And after the iPhone 10, we won't be able to do it. And the funny thing is we hear this every single year, you know, for at least the last decade, at least the last 10 years in a row, every time something new comes out from a manufacturer, there's this big cloud of doom of, oh, I better figure out something else to do with my life. And I'm not saying it's never going to change, but I always look at it this way. If you consider what you do electronics repair, and don't just think I fix phones or I replace iPhone screens and that's it. Because if that's all you do, I would be concerned about the future, absolutely. But if you think beyond that and you start looking at other types of electronics you can repair, and higher level repairs, you know, things that people can't get from the manufacturer. And right off the top of my head, that's data recovery and liquid damage repair. No manufacturer is going to help you with that. And in fact, most manufacturers are not going to even replace your charge port. They're going to try to get you into a new phone. So there's no need. And also, if you didn't see the home button bypass video I made, it's a great example of what happens when you turn in a phone under warranty and you get a replacement from the manufacturer and it doesn't work. There's no touch ID, there's no home button, there's no Wi-Fi in a phone that looks like it's brand new out of the box, which again is what they typically pitch you when they give you a phone. And most of the time, you're not getting a brand new phone. I mean, it wouldn't make any sense, would it? If you had a problem with your transmission that you take it back to the dealer and they give you a brand new car, they would never stay in business that way. Neither would Apple or Samsung or Motorola or anyone else. So you're always gonna get another phone that was repaired with someone else's problems. And I have to assume it's kind of presented otherwise, you know, as if here's your new phone. Well, it's new to you. It's not brand new. And as we saw just a couple days ago, they often come with a lot of problems. Wayne Taylor said, I'm 50, born in 1967, but most my age are naive to understand their consumer rights. And again, I want to reiterate, Wayne, I am not the youngest guy in this room by any means. And what just happened in my chat here? And I try to stay, you know, I try to stay on top of what's going on when it comes to tech. But I think a lot of us are the exception to that rule. I think a lot of the older generation aren't really that concerned about it. So we have tech enthusiasts like ourselves and people who are into doing this kind of stuff. And we have other people that just kind of act like, oh, kids don't need a cell phone. I didn't have one until I was, you know, 20 something or whatever. So those are the people that I'm concerned about, because they can't really see the world the same way that the most of us do. You know, at least people that are, who are watching YouTube, you know, people who are fixing phones, people who engage in this type of conversation, which I think is a great majority of the population, where we still have a small number of people running things who are not really as in touch with the world as they could be, especially given how fast technology changes. I mean, from one week to the next, things can just dramatically transform into something that we didn't expect. And to just say, well, it wasn't like that when I was young, don't worry about it, is ridiculous, right? I mean, there's a reason we make progress, and that's so that we can enjoy life more, we can be more effective, we can be productive, we can profit, you know, we can prosper. All these kind of things come together. And for someone to say, well, if I didn't have it when I was young, you don't need it either, it's just silly. Let's go back to the comments here real quick. It's Tuesday, 6 a.m. for Wayne Taylor. Oh, yeah, right, because you are in Western Australia, right? And in fact, I had a question for you guys, and it may be John or Wayne. Real quickly, did one of you ask about the nos, or it might have even been Nate, I'm not sure, but we had a discussion about changing out the baseband CPU on an iPhone 6, and I'm curious as to which one of you that was. I don't remember. Let's see. Wayne says, there's still money in phone repair, but you have to diversify. Agree 100% there. We repair phones, radios, even electronic washing machines, PCBs, and even mobile EFT POS machines. Okay. Robert said, yeah, me too, 1967. The consumerism and the mental state that if it doesn't work, buy a new one. It started since the beginning of the Y2K. Yeah, and that's another one that I'd really like to dedicate an entire stream to, and that is the whole concept of consumerism, which is just mind-boggling. In fact, I watched a really good documentary about how they kind of used World War to sell people on an idea to buy into something, and then kind of transform that into, hey, well, if we can sell them on a war, why can't we sell them on a washing machine or a refrigerator and all this other stuff? And it's really good. It's very, very enlightening. Let's see. Not me. Okay, so it wasn't Wayne. So whoever it was, Nate, you did a baseband and on an iPhone 6. Okay, cool. I don't know if we had a discussion. I think that we were talking about it, and someone said, you know, should I try this? And I was always very skeptical about it. And I watched a video to kind of get an idea of what to expect. And long story short, I guess my question would be, did you run the jumper all the way around the side through that little hole? Because that's how I did mine, and I was kind of concerned about how that would affect. Even though it's insulated wire, you know, going right through that little hole, and then of course when you put the shield on top of it. So was it successful? So as far as my story goes, I worked on this last Friday, and I was a bit rushed for time, so I didn't get to do as much testing as I planned to. I was able to get the baseband chip off. I only pulled one pad that wasn't a non-connected pad, and I was able to jumper that. Actually directly back into the chip, because there are two separate pads that connect to the same thing. So I'm not even sure that jumper was necessary, but I did run that one. I ran the other, which I think is the U1 or the V1, the one that's required. I didn't worry about the GPS jumper because that one was still intact when I took it off, and I really didn't want to invest too much time into it. But I was surprised that it wasn't quite as difficult as I expected it to be. You know, the alignment was really my biggest concern for that, because those things are so close together. But you know, my shortcut anyways was to take a look at the adjacent components on a donor board and just kind of line things up according to that. And I was able to get it sit. So I was very happy about that. I've got to go back, because I put it together and it picked up signal and it was working. And then when I put everything back on, I put the shielding back on, put the screws in and everything, and it went back to searching again. So I'm wondering if maybe something didn't bond 100%. But I think it's encouraging to know that might be an option. I mean, we're talking about an iPhone 6, so at this point it's kind of like, yeah, maybe it's okay to go ahead and take those risks, because otherwise you're not losing out on that much, really, and it's all labor as far as reballing it, because as we know, you can't really replace that chip with a new one. So I'm interested to see. Jumpers are very short from the ball to the via. I have a video on it. The hardest part was reballing. Yeah, I'll agree, man. That thing really threw me off. It was more difficult than I expected. I don't know if it was because of the gaps between the outer and the inner part of it, but man, I did that thing about three or four times before I finally got it right. Tried using solder balls, the pre-made solder balls. That didn't work out, and I went back to the paste, but got it working at least initially. So I'm going to concentrate on that one and hopefully get it on video so I can do a demo on that. Johnny Chang, pretty often because a new toner is about half the price of the printer price. Are you talking about fixing? Oh, here we go. It's true that in the States, the cost of repair appliances or electronics is often not worth than having the devices replaced on a regular basis. As an example, printers get rotated. Yeah, and I agree 100%. It's the money, it's the ink and the toner that people pay for, right? I mean, that's where the real money is. You could almost give the car away and then charge a fortune for the gas, I guess would be the equivalent. But let's see, pretty often because a new toner is about half the price of the new printer price. Also, talking about planned obsolescence, and I will add to that, when you buy a printer, in many cases, you get something called a starter cartridge. So, you know, it would seem like it would make sense. Well, if I run out of ink, I'll just go buy another printer because it comes with the ink or the toner cartridges, right? But working in office supply for a while, what we found out is that they make these things called starter cartridges. And if you look for the labeling, there are brands that have exception to that rule. I want to say once in a while, you'll come across a Brother or a Canon product that actually comes with a full cartridge when you buy the printer. But that's kind of the exception to the rule. Most of the time you get something that'll do a few hundred pages, and then you've got to buy a new cartridge or a new ink or toner cartridge, and then you realize how expensive that stuff is. If you filled up a gas tank with printer ink, last time I checked, it would cost you something like $350,000, and that was a long time ago. So yeah, printer ink is super, super valuable. All right, so let's see. Let's go back here. I wanted to just jump on this real quick because I'm interested to see what you guys think. And I'm always talking a little about how we should, if not be concerned, at least be aware of how tracking everything that you do, everywhere you go, you know, who you call, who you text, what you say, your GPS location, how this, you know, could potentially go wrong for people. And I think this is a perfect example. We have members of the military who were, I want to say, in Afghanistan and Iraq, and they were using a fitness app and thinking this was a great way to keep track of their physical activity. And they're running around, you know, these routes that they've established for exercise and comparing their results to other people. And all the while, this application is collecting their GPS coordinates and creating a map showing the areas that their exercise routines are, you know, repeated probably almost daily. And someone said, hey, you know, this is probably not a good idea for us to be able to tell you where to find our military personnel, especially when they're stationed on a secret base where they're out there and they're not even allowed to write home and say where they're at. You know, if they get on whatever sort of communication they have, it's an email or if it's talking through live stream, something like this, or FaceTime, they're not allowed to mention their location because this obviously, if it falls into the wrong hands, could be bad news for them. Well, if you're running around, obviously with an application that tracks your GPS, I don't think you really even have to be in the military to kind of be concerned with who has access to that information. I mean, there are some strange people in the world. There are people who have been stalked. There are military and law enforcement members who probably don't need for the general public to know where they're at 24/7. So I thought this was an interesting story. And again, call me paranoid if you want, but I think that there can be detriments to this kind of tracking. And that's one of the reasons that I'm not really a huge fan of the idea of having something like, you know, the Amazon Echo or one of the Google, or, you know, even the HomePod that Apple's coming out with in my home. Because I don't know, it's kind of creepy to me. Yeah, given with phones, computers, everything else, your location is out there somewhere. But, you know, this obviously kind of illustrates that when we start looking at third parties, I think that's where the concern really has to be. It's not necessarily in the technology, but it's in the company that is accessing this data. And what are they doing with it? Who are they sharing your information with? And who can we really trust? Because you don't have to trust the App Store or Google Play. You have to also trust the developers who are writing this software and creating these apps and make sure that, you know, what guarantee do you really have that this information isn't for sale, you know? And considering the fact that early last year, there was legislation passed that says that your ISP, whoever you get your internet service from, can sell all of your data to whatever advertisers they want. And they use this obviously to target and say, okay, this is what we think this person is interested in. So here's what kind of commercials we should be showing them. And yes, I understand Google does that through your browser and that's fine. But you know, where else is that information going is my real question. If someone is interested in you and, you know, finding you for some reason or tracking you down, with ill intents. That would be my biggest concern about this type of technology. Let's see. It's legal to change the IMEI of a phone. So we're going to jump back here real quick to the chat. And I didn't know if this was in relation to what we were talking about with the baseband CPU. It's legal to change the IMEI of a phone device. Not talking about cloning it, but just changing the default one provided from an unlocked device. Technically, Johnny, to my knowledge, no, it is not legal. So the FCC is pretty strict about allocating things like serial numbers to any type of radio device or any type of radio communication equipment, including phones and tablets. And I can tell you, you know, a few years ago, we would do flashing. We take a phone and we put it onto a different system. And I know that one of the things that would often come up is people would say, hey, I need to put my phone on this metro carrier. And in order to do that, you had to have a donor IMEI, which clearly meant that people were taking the serial number from one phone and transferring it onto another phone. Now, I suspect that the reason that that never really became a problem was because both of those phones belonged, you know, the person who was transferring the IMEI over was the rightful owner and wasn't defrauding anyone really in that process. But technically, you know, to my knowledge, I don't think that it's legal, but I don't think that there are any cases that really where it's gone to trial or where anyone's been prosecuted for it. So I don't think there's a standard at this point in time. And I don't think that they're really looking for that. You know, back a long time ago when people were committing fraud with cloned ESNs and that kind of stuff, obviously that was a big problem. But I can say very, you know, as recently as probably 2.5 years ago or so, I knew that there were people out there who were using what they called donor IMEIs and they were flashing them onto another phone so that the phone could be used on a different carrier. Now, if you're doing that because you have a phone that has been reported lost or stolen and you're changing the IMEI purposefully so that you can circumvent that blacklist and get the phone back onto the network, I think that you probably should have concern that, you know, if and when that ever became known by the right people, you could get in some trouble. I would be more concerned about offering that service. You know, I think it's unlikely that they would go after the customer, but if someone wanted to find something that you were doing wrong and you were doing what they call IMEI repair, maybe, you know, so far I don't think anyone's really made a big deal out of it. Technically, I don't know that it's legal, but again, I'm not an attorney, so don't take my advice on that one. Let's see, to provide the default. I was curious to know what the objective there was. Not talking about cloning, but changing the default one provided from an unlocked device. Well, you would still have to unlock that device if that's what you're getting at. If you have a device that's locked, like it's network locked and you change the IMEI, the device itself is still not going to accept a foreign SIM card until you actually unlock it. So that's not going to solve your problem. And in the case of any Apple devices, that's not going to happen unless you transfer like four different components from a donor phone and move them over to the new phone because you've got the cloud and everything else on there and they're all tied together for the most part. I hope that answers your question. It's the world we live in, tracking software on everything. I'm still a cop 33 years on, retiring soon, but I value my privacy for security of me and my family, says Wayne Taylor. And I agree 100%, Wayne, and this is probably my biggest concern, you know, that when we worry about things like a military and a police force that we are supporting to protect us from, you know, the bad guys. And if those bad guys can figure out where these people are all the time, or if someone has some kind of axe to grind with a member of law enforcement, yeah, this could become very dangerous. And I would say that would, you know, that could include anyone, but beyond law enforcement, if we look at politicians and celebrities and things like that, they're probably the ones that are at the greatest risk for someone who figures out a way to determine your location and track you down. So I'm with you 100%. Is not legal, but who is there to arrest you, Robert? Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, it's very unlikely that if you're changing IMEIs or repairing IMEIs that you're going to be prosecuted for it, at least in this point of time. At this point in time, I'm just trying to give you, you know, the best information that I have. I don't think that it's technically legal, but I agree. I don't think there's anyone out there saying, hey, what are you doing changing these IMEIs? Unless you're doing it for fraudulent purposes. So if you were trying to steal someone's IMEI and put it onto your phone and, you know, maybe, I don't know, receive some of their data or calls or something like that, then you might have some reason to worry. Hi, Andrew McKenzie. How's it going? Good evening from England. Awesome. That's right. You have the one with the you have the channel with the photo of something in England. I remember that. I think iCloud locks blocks IMEIs are a waste at some point. I mean, we literally destroy hundreds of seized and found phones every month. Can't sell as non-working. Can't sell as parts due to personal. Yeah, that's another thing. And I mean, what's the answer to that though? Because we set up the whole iCloud and factory reset protection so that people would be discouraged from stealing phones. So if we figure out a way to bypass that, what's going to happen, I suspect, is that we'll have all sorts of services springing up saying, "Hey, we can take your cloud off for you," which, you know, to a certain extent, there are some people out there offering those services. I don't recommend them. And, you know, my question is, why would you be doing something like that? And they're not really 100% reliable. And a lot of times you end up wasting your money and getting nothing out of the deal. But yes, good point. We end up throwing a lot of stuff away because of that. And I mentioned this before, but I'm in a situation like that. I have a tablet that's mine that I paid for that had another iCloud on it that we can't get off because the person who had the iCloud changed their email address, and I'm just kind of stuck with the device that doesn't work. So there are exceptions to the rule. I mean, there are legitimate reasons to remove an iCloud that you don't have the credentials for, but by and large, I think most of the time we're looking at lost or stolen devices. And the other thing is, you know, getting that device back to the rightful owner, which can be tricky. And I think we're going to do a video about that also because there are a few steps that you can take to kind of try to track down the person who owns the device. And of course, the thing is, who is going to take that time out of their day to do it? And, you know, especially if it's an agency, you know, if let's say that a lost and found or a company or a police department or anyone else comes into possession of a bunch of lost or stolen phones, how many resources can they really allocate to trying to track down the person that that belongs to? You know, you're probably going to have to try to come and claim it and see if they have it. I doubt anyone's going to call you and say, "Hey, we found your phone," if it has a lock on it. You know, if they can't get past the lock screen, it's going to be more difficult to figure out who that phone belongs to and more time consuming. Say one try to keep the device. It's currently using the IMEI, maybe getting tracked along for some reason. Just have a chance to shake up the tracks. Just to have chance to shake up the tracks. Let me read that one more time. Say one try to keep the device it's currently using, but the IMEI may be getting tracked along for some reason, just to have a chance to shake up the tracks. Can you clarify that, Johnny? I'm a little unclear on what that means. Information might be on the phones. We destroyed 22 iPhone 7s 2 weeks ago. I mean, I can't even buy four parts with my side business. That's crazy. You guys destroyed 22 iPhone 7s. To smash these, it makes me cringe sometimes. Hey, Wayne, let me give you a suggestion. I don't know if you're the person in charge of smashing these phones, but if you are, start making some YouTube videos because that seems to be what everyone wants to view. So if you have phones that are disposable and you can't do anything with them, try shooting them or blowing them up and make a YouTube video. You'll probably get thousands or tens of thousands of views on that one. But yeah, that's pretty sad. Also, there are DIY kits to reassemble rudimentary GSM phones. Those have a radio chip with an IMEI. Could one use those as a donor IMEI? I suppose you could, you know. Man, you know, I don't want to give you bad advice. If, as it was mentioned earlier on here, if you have an IMEI that's rightfully yours and if you write that IMEI onto another device, chances are no one's going to come looking for you and you're probably not infringing on anyone's rights. And I think that's the main concern there. You know, technically, are you within the boundaries of the law? To my understanding, when the FCC assigns a serial number to a radio device, you're not allowed to change it. But again, I doubt anyone's coming after you looking for that. They probably don't care. And if you're using your own IMEI, what are the odds they're going to have any idea? That's debatable too. Because apparently, one of the things about some of these IMEIs that have been changed is that networks can potentially detect what type of device you're using. So if you have an IMEI from an HTC and you write that into a Samsung Galaxy, there's a possibility that the carrier could reject that IMEI based on the fact that it doesn't match up with the type of phone that you're using. So that's a potential problem, but really, I think it's unlikely. Changing the IMEI for privacy purposes, well, again, I doubt anyone's coming after you, but you know, proceed at your own risk, I guess, if you're in the US, at least to the best of my knowledge. But yeah, I doubt anyone's gonna come looking for you. Okay, so I think that was a lot of what I had on here. I did want to talk about a few things that are not news related, so let me get my cool phone art picture. I had to change that because I was tired of looking at those bunch of Nokias on here. I have an iPhone that was given to me to fix, but it has an activation lock and the Apple ID on it is disabled. Okay. It has an act. When, oh, so you probably need a native SIM card more than likely, or connect to Wi-Fi, I would think, or iTunes, right? I have an iPhone that was given to me to fix, but it has an activation lock. If the Apple ID is disabled, does it have a cloud lock? Because that would be, is that what you're referring to? It doesn't have a passcode on the phone? Because you should be able to get past the activation screen as long as you've got either a, you might need a native SIM card, and in many cases, you'll just need to connect to iTunes. Let's see, Robert said, I'll subscribe to that. Nothing better than to watch an Apple product being destroyed. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is a funny thing. If you destroy stuff, you'll get plenty of views. Check out the Hydraulic Press channel if you get a chance. All they do is destroy things all day, and people love this. And it's a lot easier to do than to repair something, right? Just to break it. Sounds bad, but there's no sense in time tracking sense of those phones. Yeah. I changed the CID of an HTC just to try another version of the GSM ROM, and after I have difficulty getting the phone reactivated. Oh, okay. Yeah, that could be a problem also. And there are probably some other settings. I'm certainly not the expert on reprogramming IMEIs, but there might be a lot of information you have to make sure that gets flashed in there at the same time. So, unfortunately, I can't help you a whole lot with that. There might be someone else on here who can, but, you know, for the most part, we rarely would have any reason to change an IMEI that I'm aware of. So I certainly haven't put any time into that. Let's see. So I think there was one other thing. Oh, I wanted to tell you guys, this is really cool. Now, I understand that a lot of you show up on Monday because Thursday is probably not a great time for you. But this Thursday, I have set up a panel with three other YouTube tech creators. We did one last Thursday with one person, and it was so much fun, and it went so well, and there was so much participation in the chat that I started sending out some invites to other people and got an overwhelming response. So we're going to do this Thursday night at 6 p.m. Google Hangout style, so it will be me with three other people, so you can hopefully get, you know, four times as much information or knowledge or ability to answer questions that maybe I can't on here. I talked to these guys beforehand, and they're all very tech-focused. Pretty much on phones, and this is going to be a lot of fun. So definitely for anyone, if you're already subscribed, make sure you hit that bell notification icon on my channel. If you don't, you won't be notified when the stream is starting. And for anyone else who hasn't subscribed, why haven't you subscribed? Anyways, I hope that you'll subscribe and hit the bell notification icon so that you know when this thing is getting started. YouTube's gotten a little tricky here, because if you don't do that, no one ever sends out a notification. I usually put these on Twitter and Facebook, but as far as YouTube, you have to have that notification thing turned on. And of course, I appreciate all of you if you hit the like button down there. Anytime between now and when the video ends, that would be awesome. That will help me get some traffic and hopefully continue to be able to make YouTube videos, which is my plan. Beyond that, let's see. Beyond that, there was a couple other things I want to talk about, and one of them is rebranding, so I just want to throw this out there in advance because I'm not sure when it's going to happen, but it is pretty much inevitable in the near future that I need to rename this channel. So I started out as Go Cell Phone Repair with the intent of having search engine optimization for phone repairs, and obviously I still will be publishing phone repair videos on my channel, but I don't want to categorize myself as a repair only channel. There's a lot of other things going on within the technology realm, you know, when it comes to phones and tablets and laws and everything else here. So I need to have something that's a little more broad than that. So if you see something in your feed or you get a communication from a channel that's not Go Cell Phone Repair in the future, that might be me. I will be rebranding this channel at some point. I'm not sure how soon. I want to make sure that there's advance notice out there so everyone knows about it and it doesn't come as a surprise and you don't think, oh, who is this guy? I need to unsubscribe from this. I don't even know what this is. So that might be me in the near future. That's my plan. Also, Nate, if you're still watching, you are watching because I just saw your comment come in. Nate, I wanted to say thanks for the link that you sent me, and I want to save that for another live stream. I think that we'll do an entire live stream about batteries, battery health, maintaining batteries, battery technology, what we're going to expect in the future. I think that will easily fill an entire hour worth of content. And at the same time, my idea was, why don't we give some tips to people about how to maintain their batteries and get the most life out of them that they possibly can. So I'm going to do some research, and have some multimedia that we can put up here and kind of facilitate that. But thanks for that article. I appreciate it. I love when people send me information that might be useful on the stream. And that's one that I've been meaning to kind of concentrate on for quite a while now, especially since we have all the bad battery news coming out about Apple. And really, again, just mind-blowing that exploding batteries and throttling people's devices might blow up in, no pun intended, that might actually work against the manufacturer's efforts to stop right to repair, and that would be the best kind of irony there really is. I hope that that's you know, what puts us over the edge and actually forwards this effort to the point where things start really changing for us. Let's back up here to the comments again, because I got behind just a bit. No, it has no iCloud lock on it. It's been plugged into iTunes, but when the correct email and passcode is entered, it says the account has been disabled. Whoa, okay. Can you contact the person that has that email account? Because there's probably something they did that they can do on their end, I would think, to get past that. It sounds like they... Where'd you get the phone from? I hope it was from someone that you know, because that's what it sounds like to me. In the evening is definitely a best time to gather. Yeah, and my idea, you know, obviously, again, we're dealing with people from all around the world, so, you know, I'm kind of limited in being able to accommodate everyone. But my thinking is that 6 p.m. in the evening, a lot of people on the West Coast, which is where I'm from, are off work. And then people on the East Coast, if they watch the stream from, you know, their time's going to be from 9 to 10 p.m. Hopefully that's not too late for people that have to get up and go to work in the morning. So that was kind of my... I thought would be the sweet spot. I know it's not convenient for everyone. We'll try to do some streams at different times of day later on, but I like the evening hangouts. They're a lot of fun. A lot more people in my area are available to stream. You know, most people are working or at their job Monday, so it's tough for them to do that. So that's why I think we're going to keep the guests mostly on Thursday evenings as far as that's concerned. My notification was turned off, and that's why I missed Thursday. Yeah, that happens to me a lot too, Nate. I don't know why, but I have quite a few channels that I subscribe to, and I keep missing their notifications. So you have to go, maybe it resets itself or something, but you have to check that notification icon, make sure it's turned on. Let's see. Mike's Tech and Talk. Thank you, Wayne. I will consider that. I am going to be brainstorming, and I'm open to suggestions. Mike's Tech and Talk. Yeah, maybe personalize it a little more. That's not bad, actually. I've got to change it to something, though, because, you know, just being cell phone repair is not going to be appropriate for all of my content. Why not make another channel and keep this as cell phone repair? Robert, that's funny you said that. I was thinking, I actually had that on my list of questions this morning to pose to the audience. Because I've got a couple different things happening. You know, I've engaged with people who watch my channel, and people who are looking for repair and see things that aren't repair, you know, tend to not really be excited about watching those videos, and vice versa. I have people that want simple how-to stuff, you know, how to get past the home button on their iPhone. And when I show them some micro soldering video, it's not going to be appropriate for them. You know, they're not interested in that. In fact, any non-professional really is not going to care about higher level repair stuff. So, you know, the choice to split to another channel has been greatly affected by recent developments with YouTube. My idea was this: let's keep this Go Cell Phone Repair and start another channel that's just tech in general, you know, or tech news or tech discussion. Well, now if you start a new channel, if you don't get to 1,000 subscribers and have a total of 4,000 hours worth of view time within a 12-month period, you don't get access to all the creator tools, which is really, really a bummer for me. You know, you don't get to monetize, which in my eyes is not a deal breaker, because if you don't have 1,000 subscribers, monetization probably is not going to do a lot for you as far as AdSense goes through YouTube. But not being able to have all the tools available that I do now is what's discouraging me from branching off and doing a second channel. And, you know, in addition to that, I am actually starting, I guess you would say, another second channel that has nothing to do with tech or phone repair. So that would be you know, three total channels if I go that direction. So I'm just not sure if that's the best option, but it is something I'm considering. You know, I thought about doing a third channel, but man, I'm just wondering if that's just not going to divide my viewers and then lose half of them in the process. And that's what I really want to avoid. So, but definitely under consideration at this point. Andrew said it's my dad's phone, iPhone 4. I would contact that person if you can, Andrew, and see if they can log into their iCloud account, and if there's something they can do to take that block off and, you know, really get more background information. Have you checked the IMEI, like on checkesnfree.com there, or swappa.com/ESN? If you put that IMEI or MEID, whichever it may be, into their database, they can typically check the background and see if that phone's been reported lost or stolen, if it's clear for activation, that kind of stuff. So I'd probably start there and then contact the person who has the account credentials for that iCloud or for that iPhone and see if they can help you out with it somehow. Why does phone not use nickel metal hydride batteries? To my understanding, those are pretty reliable. The Innoloop ones are top performers. My understanding was that when we went to nickel, or when we went to lithium ion and lithium ion polymer batteries, it was supposed to be better than nickel metal hydride. One thing I can tell you for sure about nickel metal hydride is that they are super sensitive to cold temperatures. So if you had a nickel metal hydride battery in your phone and your phone got left out, you know, anywhere probably below, I don't know, 50, 40 degrees Fahrenheit, it will drain the battery rapidly. So I think that that was one of the main reasons that we moved away from nickel metal hydride. Also, they were resistant to the memory effect that nickel cadmium batteries had at the time, but they weren't 100% immune. So there was something about the chemical makeup of nickel metal hydride that could cause problems over long term when people were plugging in their phones and unplugging them and not going through a full charge and discharge cycle. That's to my the best of my knowledge. I think that's why they moved on to lithium ion, among other reasons that they saw as beneficial for that type. But there should be some newer battery technology coming out soon, hopefully, which is exciting because really, you know, we talked about this, more than half of the inside of your phone is most likely battery, which seems crazy because if we could cut down on that battery size, think of all the stuff that they could fit inside the phone and not have to cram these things into small compartments. And you could even have a headphone jack if you wanted. I'm sure nobody wants that by now, right? But I wouldn't mind. It would be cool when my battery dies on my Bluetooth if I could just plug in my headphones without a dongle. Stream time's fine from fine with me, watching with coffee before work in hours or so. Perfect. Industry talk, tech repairs, product reviews, sort of three type videos you do. Yeah, pretty much. So at least for this channel, you know, there's the repairs, and I would classify that in two different categories. We have repairs for everyone. Like I have a lot of do-it-yourself stuff. You know, if you wanted to come on and learn how to change out an iPhone 7 screen, I think a lot of people could do that repair. Obviously, if we're talking about like the iPhone 6 and 6S, you know, pretty much anyone can change out that screen. So my intention when I started this channel was mainly to help other technicians because at the time there wasn't a lot of quality content as far as how to repair phones. So that's why I started the channel. And then I started noticing that a lot of everyday people were saying, hey, I can totally do this. I'll buy the parts and the screwdriver and do it myself. So I kind of branched off into that a bit. But as I'm kind of moving into stuff that's beyond the reach of people who don't have access to the tools or the experience that we need for these higher level repairs, we've got that group also. And then as you mentioned, we have kind of the tech news segment, which I really enjoy because I like to keep up to date with what's going on. So yeah, those are kind of the three categories that we're looking at. You can always start another channel if all the current subscribers commit to subscribe to the new channel ASAP. Previous consent and announcement on your part. Yeah, that's a good point. And you know, if I start another channel, I'll definitely promote it here, 100%. Robert has committed already. Thank you, I appreciate that. Nickel metal hydride twice as long to charge and suffers memory effect. Lithium doesn't. Yeah, and that's what I remember was the memory effect. Kind of was still a problem with that. And then obviously if they take longer to charge, that's a big problem. People want their phones to charge in under an hour. And that's right now. That was a long time ago. That was back in the 90s. But I remember it did take quite a while to get those things charged. Thank you, Wayne, for pointing that out. Some Panasonic cordless phones still use a pair of AAA as default for the handset. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? We got batteries that you have to replace. What? That's nuts. Let me pull up my list here because I think I had maybe one other thing. And then we can move on, or you guys can go back to what you're doing and I'll end this stream, but I want to make sure that I didn't skip anything. And of course, if you have questions or comments, always feel free to put them up here. If we don't get them now, you can always post them on a video and I'll do my best to answer them for any casual viewers that are swinging by. We talked about rebranding and or creating a second channel, baseball, CPU reball. I'll have some photos tomorrow. Like I said, it worked initially and then it stopped. And I think it might be because of the pressure caused by putting the screws back into the board and putting the shields back on. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm hoping to work that out because I'd like to be able to have a good fix for that. When we get to that point where the only thing that's going to fix the phone is reballing the baseband CPU and you have nothing left to lose, Well, then we need to get good at that, right? Because that's something people are going to be asking for, even though it's an old phone, at least on the iPhone 6. Some of these channels out there are now really starting to show their arrogance to audience. Yeah, there's a lot of funny stuff going on out there with YouTube in general. And, you know, it's really interesting. This Thursday, we're going to be talking about a little more about YouTube and Facebook, actually, who is kind of rolling out slowly their platform of video streams. And I actually watched a couple things going on earlier, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with them. They obviously have quite a ways to go before they'd have any of the functionality that YouTube does. So they're kind of in the big beginning stages. Also very interesting that Amazon has acquired some time ago the Twitch platform. So I wonder if Amazon doesn't have plans on getting into this whole business of people publishing their own videos. And, you know, YouTube feeling a lot of pressure, obviously, from advertisers. They've had to make some sweeping changes because people come in and say, we don't want our brand associated with this content. Well, with the number of content creators that YouTube has, especially with people who are pretty careless as far as what they publish and what they say on their channels, you know, it makes sense that YouTube says we need a minimum criteria for you to meet in order for us to say, okay, you can have advertising on your channel. Because obviously, with over 50 million YouTube channels, you can't keep a close eye on everyone. So there was also a lot of shady stuff going on where people were just making channels to try to rip off other people's content, publish that, and then monetize it. So, you know, that problem's going to kind of be taken care of. Not that there's a lot of monetization. And speaking of, I am also going to throw this out there. I have hesitated up to this point to do any sort of fundraising on this channel because I didn't want this, you know, I don't want this information to cost anyone money. So I'm never going to say, hey, you have to pay or donate or do anything like that. But I am looking at some other options for monetization here because obviously this takes some time to prepare and to set up. And I'm not trying to get rich off of it, but I am having to pay my ISP every month and take time out of my day to do this. And AdSense is okay, but it doesn't really pay the bills at this point. So I'm looking at some other options. I don't want this to look like a pay-per-view thing. You know, obviously everyone's welcome to come on here at any time. But I think I'm going to start looking at possibly Patreon or PayPal or something like that. And starting this Thursday, I am going to see if maybe we can get some super chats or something like that going on. Because I think that's a lot of fun too. You know, I've watched other channels where they do that. And if you can go on and do a super chat and get something to pop up on the screen in the meantime, it doesn't have to be a huge amount of money. It could be $1 or $2 or something like that. I think that would be entertaining and certainly be an incentive for me, you know, to look forward to. Just the accomplishment of saying, hey, I made $2. That'd be fun. Let's see. I have an iPad 2 that needs a lot of work doing it. Do you think I should make a series for it and put it on YouTube? I think you mentioned that in one of your comments, right, Andrew? I would encourage you to create content that you want to just to see how it goes and get feedback and decide if that's something that you want to do long term. And if it's an iPad 2, why not? If you're talking about the fact that it's an iPad 2, I say absolutely. I still have people viewing, I want to say my iPad mini and my iPad Air videos, which are, those devices are several years old and they still get tons and tons of views. So I wouldn't hesitate to do that repair just because it's an iPad 2 based on how old it is, if that's your concern. And if you already have a YouTube channel and you want to create something, why not, man? Why not see what happens? And by the way, have a thick skin and be prepared for people to say silly things because they always do. That's my best advice for anyone who's publishing on YouTube. You're going to get a certain amount of people who just are, I don't know, just trying to get your goat, so to speak. You know, they're trying to get a reaction from you. So you can ignore them, you can delete them, whatever it is. You know, moderate your comments if you want, but don't let any of that discourage you. There's always going to be someone out there who's going to say something negative, and you really just have to let it roll off like water on a duck's back, so they say. Forums used to their help similar minded texts. Lewis and Jessa, $30 a month to answer questions too seems a bit greedy, especially when a lot of users are supplying answers like me. Yeah, you know, I actually looked at Jess's forum and, you know, I think that one thing that she wanted to do was to get away from Facebook because the Facebook group it's just difficult. There's a lot of reasons that it sucks, honestly. There are great people on there and there's great content and good information, but to try to find an answer and interacting with a lot of people who are members of those Facebook groups is not always a positive experience. So, you know, it's funny, I don't use Facebook a lot, but when I do, it's often to go into that group and I do get valuable information there, but you really have to sift through a lot of garbage. And I think that was one of the reasons that they set up the forum. As far as whether $30 a month is too much to ask questions, you know, obviously that's up to each person. I'm not paying $30 a month to get questions answered unless I'm getting a question, you know, answered. And I understand, you know, Jess's goal, I think, is to get like-minded problem-solving peoples together in one spot. So a lot of times she will, I don't want to say answer a question with a question, but she'll often steer people in a direction to where they can come to their own conclusions, or they can follow a certain path and try to figure something out. You know, $30 a month probably seems like a lot for us to spend. And on her end, to get $1 a day from a person, you know, from one single member, probably doesn't add up to a lot at the end of the day. So, you know, I don't know. I really am in favor of keeping things voluntary. You know, if you like what you see, then you're free to donate or make a purchase or whatever. Oh, and while I'm at it, I do want to mention this. This was kind of one of my solutions to this. And that is, if you spend money, you should be getting something of value, you know, in addition to content that really is free to access for anyone. So you can come watch anyone's channel and it shouldn't cost you any money. But if you would like to help support this channel and not spend money on nothing, here's an option. I have created a link. It's down in the video description. So if at any time you go to that link, it goes to eBay, you can purchase whatever you want. It will still cost you the same amount of money. And based on whether or not you have an eBay account, and if you make the purchase within 24 hours, I might get a percentage of that, depending on what it is that you buy. So if you like to help my channel and do it painlessly, next time you want to buy something on eBay, click the link that's down in the video description. And if you make the purchase within 24 hours of clicking that link, then they kick something back to me. And if you do anything beyond that, then they don't. So it's kind of goofy. They work a little like Amazon. It's like, come here and buy now, or else the person who sent you here gets nothing. But it's better than absolutely nothing, right? Don't use Facebook myself. Was privileged to get first access to Facebook years ago and thought, whoa, I can see lots of problems with this. Yeah, well, and now we're really seeing that Facebook has caused a lot of problems, and that will be an entire stream in and of itself as well. The heart of a forum is the moderators who keep all the discussion on track and delete useless posts. Being a moderator is almost a full-time job. Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, that does take some time and energy to do, for sure. And that's one thing. Even having a YouTube channel, keeping up with the comments is a chore. You know, it's usually once a week I'll come on and probably knock out, you know, 20 or 30 answers for videos that I published. And that becomes time consuming. And that's just to answer, you know, comments for the most part. Lisa Forbes, welcome. I don't think I've seen you here before. I am actually starting up a YouTube channel for my repairs. Right now I'm just recording my videos and then upload them. Eventually we'll like to do live stream. Well, Lisa, let's take a look at your channel. Is your channel already up and running? Because I am strongly in favor of supporting people who are publishing on YouTube and just starting out. And I see that you don't have content on your channel yet. That's cool. When you do, feel free to come back, and I'd love to take a look at your videos while they're on there and have other people check them out and encourage them to see. And if it's good content, I know you'll succeed. You know, if you publish regularly and you offer value to people, you'll get subscribers and you'll get views. Absolutely. So don't hesitate. Check it out and see if you like it. Wow. Okay. I think I got behind here real quick. Or I got behind on the comments. Where do we go here? Okay. Get a lot of contacts for hardware. I subscribe to Jess's forum. It's well worth it to me because it helps me make money. I like getting specific answers to my issues based on what the symptoms are I'm dealing with. She has taught me everything I know about microsoldering. Awesome. Well, that's good to hear. That is encouraging. Let's see. Yeah, so, you know, I've checked out Jess's forum. I've just done reading. I haven't subscribed and I haven't asked questions yet. And I like to try to figure this stuff out for myself whenever I can. And I know that's not a please bro solution forum, but if she's steering you in the right direction, and that's really one of the things that I am still wanting to master, you know, is wrapping my head around the logic that is used to diagnose some of these very complex repairs, you know, where it's not like just change this out or solder that back on or remount this. It's like, where is it? You know, I can find a short on the board. That's not a problem. But when we have an open line or we have something that shows no, you know, it's brain dead, as they say, like it doesn't charge, it doesn't turn on, there's no power, there's no indication of charging, and the charging system looks like it should be functional, where do you go from there? That's the stuff that I really, at this point, am still learning and want to master. So maybe I should join Justice Forum too. I don't know. But I'm kind of a lurker at this point. You know, I'm just reading the information on there and trying to get what I can. I really enjoy her channel, and I honestly empathize with her for the last video she made about people that are doing this, you know, just heating up boards to try to fix them. I mean, what makes you think that pointing a heat gun at a logic board is going to do anything good? And yet, I'm surprised at the number of people that I still got that response from when I'm talking to them and they say, oh yeah, I just refloat it. And I'm like, what do you mean you refloat it? You can't reflow a CPU. You know, that's not a wise choice. And at the same time, those people are probably not watching this channel or her channel or any other place where they're going to get good advice. So I think that's going to continue to happen, unfortunately. It's pretty sad. There are lots of people breaking phones out there and they're not customers. They're people who are supposed to be fixing them. Unfortunate. Let's see. 1080 frames per second camera for scopes today. New model. This has a Sony IMX290 sensor, 280 with DHL Express delivery. Wow. If you get value, you need great, but a lot of us have years of experience already. Okay. You guys are having your own conversation and I'm butting in. Sorry. Let's see. My YouTube channel is I Repair Devices. I have 4 videos. Oh, okay. So it's not the, I didn't find it, Lisa, because I actually just clicked on your profile here. So I Repair Devices. Let's take a look at that and I'll bookmark it while I'm here. I Repair. Well, let's try searching in YouTube, Mike. Have to remind myself that I am using a Windows keyboard on a Mac, so I always hit the wrong buttons here. All right, so we can check out Lisa's channel. I Repair. I think I got the wrong one. Oh, I Repair I Devices. Gotcha. 2 separate words. That's what happened. I tried to look up I Repair Devices. There we go. I Repair I Devices, and we have iPad mini, charge port replacement, a Wave radio, error messages, an HP Pavilion G7, and iPhone 6S, gray Wi-Fi. Cool. Lisa, I'm not going to play those right here because it's going to make a big mess of my stream if I do, but I'm definitely going to check that out. So if anyone wants to check out Lisa's channel, there it is, I Repair I Devices, and I'll keep an eye on that, Lisa, and congratulations on starting that out. You always feel a little more incentive, I think, when you know you're going to be documenting something to do the job right. At least I do. Exactly. Those using heat gun won't get go watching her channel. Yeah, that's the thing. When I was watching the video that she did, and she was kind of just, you know, what is wrong with you people? Don't do this. And the problem is they're not looking for the correct information. So chances are we're not going to be able to reach them here. And I think the only real incentive for preventing that problem is to get to those places of business where these technicians are doing silly things like that and make sure that when something like this goes wrong, that their boss or their supervisor or the owner of that store knows what happens and he says, don't do that anymore. You know, and if it's going to be the owner himself who's performing the repairs, well, you know, that's going to be a tough one. But yeah, communicating this information to people that need to know it is going to be a real challenge. And that's probably a good place to go, you know, a good place to do that probably would be the Facebook group, but you think they would know by now because everyone's talking about how that's a silly thing to do. I don't know what the answer is. There are always going to be people looking for shortcuts. And in fact, every time I do a training, I always get this, you know, I always get the question, well, okay, you showed me the right way to do this. Now, what's the shortcut to get it done faster? I'm going, that's the whole point here is to do it correctly, not to do it the easy way, because you're always taking more risk when you do that. Use the right tools for the job. You can only tell people so many times. You can only lead them to water, I suppose. Let's see. I'll let you know how those cameras work. New manufacturer, current camera are TubeTech, Amscoke. Interesting. You know, I see a lot of cameras also, Wayne, that are made by or sold through China that don't have the Amscoke brand name on them, but they look a whole lot like Amscoke. So I suspect that Amscope's manufacturing is being sold under secondary brand names also, because they have a lot of stuff on the market right now. All right, friends, I want to say thanks again for joining me. I want to invite you one more time to Thursday evening for anyone who just got on the stream here. We have a panel of tech enthusiasts that are going to be joining me for a Google Hangout where we're talking about phones and techs and not just repair stuff. We're going to talk about you know, things that are going on right now with YouTube and Facebook and everything that you can possibly imagine, and these channels that these guys are making, they're all very interesting. I went and checked them out before I recruited them, so I think they'll have a lot to offer here. And it's just a nice way to unwind at the end of Thursday evening and have some good conversation about phone stuff. So I hope to see you there. And again, if you come back later on, or if you see that, if you're viewing this, I guess I should have said this at the beginning of the stream, but I will have timestamps and links to all the sources for the information that are used in this live stream, and also my own eBay link, where if you'd like to support my channel, next time you buy something on eBay, make sure you click on that link and then hurry up and buy it within 24 hours, because their system is so weird. You got a day to do it and then they don't give you any credit for it, but it'll still cost you the same amount of money, so it won't cost you anything extra. And awesome. See, we got Lisa some new subscribers already. And I promise you, Lisa, if you are able to make it on Thursday evening, we will also plug your channel again so people can check it out. I am really excited to have other people publishing. Also, you should check out Nate's channel if you haven't already. You should check out Real World Repairs channel. Have I missed anyone else? We have lots of great people here who have recently started publishing on YouTube. And it's going to take a little more effort in the future to reach the point where you have access to monetization and to the creator tools that make YouTube fun to use. So everybody needs to get to 1,000. It's kind of a race, and I'm going to try to help everyone out as much as I can on that. Good night, Andrew. For only 54 minutes till Friday in the UK. What? Oh, on you're talking about on Thursday evening, right? Well, wow, that's probably not going to work for you then, I wouldn't imagine, unless you get up really early. But hopefully we'll see you there. That will be awesome. Okay, friends, I am going to leave this chat open. And if you have any other questions or comments or anything that I forgot to mention, feel free to put it in there. I will hang around here on the chat. I'm going to close this screen so that people know that was the end of the stream. But it is 3:06, so I'm going to leave this open until 3:10. So if you have anything you want to add, feel free to do so. Other than that, thanks again for joining me. I hope you have an awesome week.